My name's Clint Holly. Welcome to the Lodge Sessions. Today in the Lodge, we have Brian Lissick, Canton, Ohio native.
Akron native. Yeah, Canton resident.
currently living in Canton, Ohio. And so you're a Northeast Ohio guy?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your background.
My background? Akron originally, you know, like I said, now living in the capital of country music, the real capital of country.
Canton.
Lower Canton, you know. But no, I've, been playing music for a lot of years, got four or so records out, and I'm kind of a boring guy.
Don't bore us already.
Some guy named Clint Holly recorded one of my records, and I just finally gave him a copy. Four years later.
let's go back to the beginning then. Yeah. Were your parents music fans?
No, my mom knew some piano. I guess she still knows some piano. I don't know. My dad wasn't. His contribution to my musical development, I guess, was that he brought home he ordered it off TV or whatever, those KTEL records of Chuck Berry.
Okay.
He's like, oh, I like this guy in the service. You know, he's really good, you know, Johnny B. Good, whatever. And I didn't know Chuck Berry I didn't know anything. And so there was Chuck Berry's Greatest Hits and the Johnny Cash Prison Records that I would, you know, learn to hum as a 2-year-old or something. And really, you know, and then my mom had a bunch of, you know, 45s and like ice cream, tubs of everything from, you know, the Music Machine to, you know, Buddy Holly to whatever. So I inadvertently got a really nice, you know, music history. You know, I guess everybody kind of does, you know, of a certain era, I wasn't conscious of anything until my older brother, Brock, started playing guitar, and he lives up in New York now. And my cousins actually got Waylon Jennings' Greatest Hits.
Right.
And it took me a while to put together that this like cool looking guy on the album cover was the guy whose hands were on the Dukes of Hazzard. And you know, so it was that era where it took a while for me to actually get into the worthwhile stuff.
I mean
it was an introduction, you know, but it, you know, however you get there.
Well, now fast forward to we've known each other probably a little over 10 years now, I would say. We probably got to know each other during about 2005, the Tom Fryer era, I guess. Yeah. And what were you doing at that point? And what were you developing? Had you recorded any of the records that you have on it?
Premier or whatever, or preeminent band of my youth or whatever. It was a group I put together called the Giants of Science that at least my idea was to be like the Replacements with an accordion.
Because there was
somebody who played accordion. And then we got this Jeremy Jarrell, our bass player, you know, was a little younger than us and introduced us to the, like Dropkick Murphys and stuff. It's like, right. Oh man, they're already doing, there's already a punk band with an accordion. But we tried to sound probably what I sound like now, but it was just a mess because I was still learning how to tune my guitar but it was a beautiful mess. I mean, we put out 2 EPs and gained popularity, which was really weird. And I was writing for Scene magazine at the time. So, you know, it was, anytime there'd be a scene sponsored thing, it's like, ooh, let me on that too.
You could write your own reviews. I didn't go that far. This is the best band ever.
I didn't go that far. Maybe I paid some people. Right. No, actually, when we got it, our first record, a guy named David Martin that used to write for Scene, and I don't have any idea where he got off to. He's probably like famous now or something, but I had left Scene by that time, by the time the record came out, and he called me, he described me as, you know, former Scene writer in Dreamboat. And it's like, I've never even met this guy. So what's his Dreamboat? Maybe he was
at the show where your pants busted loose, right?
Must have been at the Sahara Club when my pants busted open. So I don't know. You know, so.
But you do have a journalistic background. So how does that play into
songwriting? I think at the end of the day, it it's become sort of, like 60s looking teal kitchens or whatever. It's become sort of a thing to with social media or whatever to go out and do your art and then write about it and record it and record it in a written form or whatever, you know. So kind of what I've always done is getting sort of common, but I think that's kind of been the idea, is that I'm trying to just kind of write, walk through life, write down what I see. You know, if it feels more like a song, then it's that. If it's a story, it's that. So, writing, working for the different publications and newspapers and stuff that I have, I was, 12 and a half years at Sun News, as a staffer. And now I still do work. I freelance for all kinds of people now.
Now, do you ever pull any inspiration for songs out of the stuff that you work on?
Sure. I've gotten to interview a lot of neat people, it's like, right. I can remember interviewing this, nobody wanted to interview this white rapper guy from Detroit, cause it's like, well, he's probably like Vanilla Ice or something. Right. I was like, oh, it's Kid Rock or something like that, So have a conversation with the guy and I find out that, his kid's the same age as my oldest daughter and, well, my only daughter, my oldest kid. He's into Bob Seger, I'm into Bob Seger, all of a sudden he becomes this,
there's a connection,
this buddy of mine for a couple of months, he come in and out of Cleveland and I figure, well, he's going to go nowhere, a couple years later, I'm working at a radio station in Canton, and one of the DJs comes out and I hear, I'm out smoking a cigarette. And I hear this, bah, what the bah, da bang, da bang, diggy. I was like, that sounds familiar, but I don't know that song. I'm like, who is this guy? And the DJ's like, oh, man, this is the greatest thing. He's great, man. He's Kid Rock. This is the greatest thing ever. I'm like, Bob Ritchie? And I'm like, I still had his phone number from the trailer park that he lived in. Detroit 2 years before. So just weird sort of, just missed it kind of thing. I'm like the Forrest Gump of Northeast Ohio
Northeast Ohio music.
I hate even telling the stories I do have it written down somewhere, I just don't have it compiled, but it's almost like right when I'm about to write this book about all these cool people and neat places that I've seen and everything, it's like, man, it sounds like I'm dropping names and making half of it up, but I think anybody could tell those stories, right. If you think about it long enough, the time you bumped into, Tom Hanks or everybody's got those stories. It's no big deal. All the wannabes, all ahead of me,
she's asleep. Wanted to see me, so come serenade me. It's gotta be January 13th. It's gotta be January 13th. I'm scared to go there. Nothing to choose and everything to lose. Well, it's 10:30 and your girlfriend's home. You're talking to someone, telling me you're alone. Can't see nothing through a telephone. And you're telling me it's January 13th. What you doing, what you doing, what you doing? 'Cause I'm getting weak. Hey baby, how about January 13.
You know, I can remember when Springsteen was on the Tom Joad tour, and, you know, and these guys I went with were these hardcore Bruce guys. I am too, but I mean, they were like, been to 20 shows or something. It's like, right, he's got to come out and sign autographs. We're just like driving around the block at the, where it was either, it was Music Hall or somewhere. And so he's going to come out, he's going to come out. And, you know, pretty soon, is, you know, literally a coffee colored Cadillac limo pulls up and out comes Bruce and there's a line of people.
Really?
And I felt, this is one guy that was in line right with us. And he had this yellowed old article from, I don't know, the Kent Stater or something, when Bruce was, you know, it was from like 1974. He'd been carrying it around.
Right before he broke
Yeah,
he'd
been
right.
carrying it around ever since. He wanted to get him to autograph it. And, you know, we got literally like from me to you, you know, and Bruce just goes, all right, have a good night. You know, and that was the end of the line.
Right.
He jumps in the Cadillac and
drives away.
And I felt worse for the guy standing there with this, you know, this yellowed piece of paper. Like, oh, you know.
He's had that thing for 25 years.
But you know, when I,
that.
Yeah, but when yeah. I, you know, at first you're kind of like, oh man, that close, you know, to shaking hands with Bruce Springsteen. But then it's kind of like, well, so what? I'd have shaken, like, what? I'd have made a big impression on him. Like,
yeah, oh. What do you say? Like, oh,
sparks fly on East Street when the boy prophet's walking handsome, man. I didn't expect, you know, it's like, you know,
I love your music. Like, yeah. I mean, like, that
he's
doesn't
gonna
mean
tell
anything.
He's going to tell a story about me at the next show. Like, I was in Cleveland. I shook hands with this kid. And it was like magic.
Probably not.
No, right. Right. I knew someday Ray Flanagan would be his guitar player.
Now, have you been playing with Ray?
Yeah. He's Ray's all over the new record. Our most recent record is called Curtis Interrupted Us.
Right.
That we recorded with Benjamin Payne, great engineer down in Canton.
Right.
And it's, you know, us exploring our inner B minor.
Right.
It's very pretty chords and stuff. But yeah, Ray, Steve Norgrove, who's played with me forever.
Yeah, I know Steve. Yeah.
But, you know, he's from Wadsworth and he lives, you know, down the road from this place called Sonnet's Coffee, and they also have alcohol, you know, so it's like stumbling distance from home, and they have a little stage set up and they have like a, you know, open mic things and concerts and stuff. So it's for a long time, it was, I probably still is for him, but it's kind of like the neighborhood place to go.
Right.
And Ray was, you know, this 15, 16 year old kid that would come by, and Steve would always go, man, he is incredible. You know, I'm like, well, you know, and he, you know, Ray,
right.
But he would do stuff like, you know, sit on a stool and play, you know, Eruption on an acoustic guitar just to be incorrigible, just to be Ray.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like, but I'm looking at him like it's like he's serious, you know, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, he's a young kid and he plays real fast and,
right,
you know, so whatever. But, you know, I don't know what occasion was, but they were doing Midnight Train to Georgia or something one night, and Ray's doing these little Steve Cropper things. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And it was right about that time that we started, you know, working on material for that record. It's like early 2013 or something. And, I mean, you know, Ray, you know, it's kind of like, hey, you want to come and, you know, play some of these songs with us?
Right.
Oh, I'm down, you know? And so I never really look at it as, you know, I mean, everybody who's in my band is in my band, but nobody's married to the band.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, Tim Longfellow.
They got other things going on.
Well, I mean,
on,
Tim
right.
Longfellow is my piano player, and I think it's cool that it's like, yeah, you know, Tim, my piano player, you know, after he got done recording with some guy named Todd Rundgren or something, you know, then he
right.
came and made my record.
Then he came in.
I'm just, he got tired of Rundgren. And, you know. But I had almost shook hands with Bruce Springsteen, so of course he wants to come play with me now,
right?
But it was, you know, I just at this moment, you know, I have I don't want to say at my disposal, but you know, I'm playing with absolutely the best musicians I've ever played with,
right?
And I, you know, it's kind of like I guess I could call it my band, but I don't want to scare them off.
Right. Yeah. As soon as you do that, like, then everybody breaks up.
Steve and I are the Paul and Gene of the thing. So I don't know which one's which.
Right.
Don't know why I would go to Marietta. Sign on that highway seems welcome today. I'm 30 more miles to 800 square feet of loneliness and facing old feelings of running away. When you first called me Papa as you walked out of that doctor's office, both cried in the elevator on our way down. Now we still talk, but only as co-debaters over kids and money and attorneys and all. And Marietta sounds like a nice enough town. Marietta sounds like a nice enough town.
So, you know, I think I'm going to do one more record with a whole bunch of chords, and then I'm going to do that one that's just like
all G.
Like a drone.
Right.
You know, I'm going to, you know, Russ Never Sleeps.
You can call it Russ Never Sleeps.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to do it Rush Never Sleeps. I'm going to do one chord and Fly By Night for the whole side of the record. And I'll put it on vinyl, even, because I know a guy.
Yeah, you might know a guy. I don't know.
That's the questions I have for you, is that, I, you know, we, if you look at this album cover, which you can see on TV or whatever, we actually made that to look like a vinyl record,
yeah.
You know, and so vinyl was always a thought with this record. I just don't know if we recorded it. There's things,
yeah.
That, you know, but we'll talk about that for another
yeah.
day, I guess. But, you know, the next, I mean, we might, I don't know. People seem to be buying it.
Oh, people are buying it.
I know.
It's been crazy.
I just did a story on Record Store Day, you know, interviewing a couple of guys, you know, that own independent record stores. And,
right.
You know, Scott Shepard.
It's become a circus, the Record Store Day.
It's pretty amazing when you hear that, like, you know, I don't know whether anybody's going to be able to make a living at it, but, you know, Scott Shepard from Time Traveler goes, you know, I still sell probably 60-40 CD versus vinyl.
He
goes, but 3 years ago, it was like 1% vinyl.
Right.
And now it's 40.
Yeah.
you know, and he said there's a guy came in from L.A. that bought up all his, like, $100 worth of his 99-cent cassette tapes and said, I can sell these out in L.A. for $10. So, you know, who knows? I mean, right. We're liable to all be recording on 8-track. Or,
hey, I'm down with that.
I'm going to put out a record on 78 just to be weird.
Well, you know, that's not
the Beach Boys did it on Record Store Day, apparently, a couple of years
ago. Did they really?
Put out a 78 special.
Nice.
Reissued one of their things.
Well, it's actually the highest fidelity format out of the faster the speed of the record, the better the
Better
fidelity.
It's yeah. So it's, you know, but I, you know, I don't know whether, you know, I don't even know if you know, my ears are probably shot enough that I don't even know what.
Yeah. We grew up listening to cassette tapes.
Yeah. Right? So what do we, you know,
man, those are horrible when you really get back to it, but so much fun.
Well, you know, Scott made a good point when I was interviewing him. He goes, there's something to be said. He goes, I think kids are realizing just the neatness of having a collection of something instead of walking around with your flash drive and going, check it out, it's my record collection. Yep. Isn't that neat?
Yeah,
and you got the music. You got the music, but I mean, there's something to be said for, you know, whether you're collecting stamps or beer bottles
or whatever.
Yeah, you know, that to have something in your hand, you know, and, you know, CDs, like I never had a problem with CDs. They're like a small, I always looked at them as like just
small
tiny little records, you know?
Yeah, but now that we're over 40, you can't even read the liner notes.
Yeah, right? That's true. Yeah, I don't know. I got the lyric sheet and everything in this latest one. So we'll see if I do that again. Cause my eyes are bad enough. I think I misspelled a couple things, and it keeps me up at night being a writer. You know?
It keeps me up at night.
There's a misplaced modifier on my new record.
Oh, the horror.
I can't sleep.
Everyone needs an anchor to secure the bow, and my anchors got tossed out to sea. Fiddlers are grinning as the ship's going down, and all the lifeboats are springing leaks. Like all of my other well-laid plans, well, she's just gonna be out of luck. The only thing that I can hope to know how to do now is keep running and remember to duck. Well, I'm a master of lines and
thanks for stopping by the
you
lodge.
Should kept, and... You should have kept a couple of the animal heads.
Yeah, they sold them all.
Yeah, did they?
Yeah, the bear down there is, how much is actually from the owners.
How much is an animal head going for?
I mean, people you'd be
are
surprised.
People are buying animal heads and vinyl. I think the world, I don't really, you know, I'm not as afraid of a Trump presidency anymore because I think the world's on the upswing.
Helping make America great.
Yeah. buy my vinyl and an animal head. Make America great again.
All right, Brian. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.